Hey, folks, what a show we have for you today. Very excited about it, but I'm also very excited to tell you about the sponsor we're working with here over at Verbal Shenanigans. As we turn the corner from the cold, dreary winter into the warmer days of spring, a new season of fantasy baseball begins at DynastySportsEmpire.com. DynastySportsEmpire.com offers you a unique fantasy baseball experience for owners young and old and abilities of all levels. So what makes DSE unique? For starters, you can draft high school and international baseball phenoms as young as 16. You can retain ownership of your favorite players for their entire career and build a cash cow contender that would make any front office envious for years to come. Check out all the fantasy baseball formats over at DynastySportsEmpire.com today or tweet them at DSC Fantasy. That's at DSC Fantasy on Twitter or online at DynastySportsEmpire.com. All right, guys, let's get to today's episode.
Hey, guys, this is Diego Garrijo, otherwise known as La Pistola, and I just want to say, don't miss out the next episode of Verbal Shenanigans. Get on board.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Verbal Shenanigans, your weekly, what do we call it? The weekly edition of Potpourri, I guess you can say.
It's the Potpourri podcast.
That's correct. Now, people might think that you are referring to our lovely lavenderish smell that we emit.
I prefer musk. I feel that
you're
more
not
fits my
musky.
Personality.
You're not musky. You're like a, you probably smell like a, I don't know, like a Cinnabon, like something sweet.
I wouldn't say sweet. I mean, like when I buy shampoos, I usually get like the ocean breeze ones.
That's your flavor?
I would guess that would be my, but I wouldn't mind having like a, I mean, I work around the yard. I can get a musk from here.
I don't see you as like just having a natural musk. I see you more of like maybe, I don't know, smelling of like maybe fragrances from the kitchen you would smell like. I don't see you having that nice like lumberjacky musk. The guy who works with wood all day having this nice musk.
I had to work with wood to get that
I just assume the musk that like women are referring to, like it's a nice musk, it's like a brawny type of like outdoorsy like craftsman.
I don't know. I mean, I think it's just more, it's like a combination of sweat and attitude in my personal
attitude.
Opinion. Yeah. Mm. I think it comes, I feel if you like, if they're into you and you're like all sweaty and all, it's like, oh, he's got a cute musk to him.
So you when you see like those slogans, like attitude is everything, it literally means like it could affect everything. Like the smell you put
absolutely.
On. Okay.
Taste. Absolutely. Like you bring her a burger or something, you don't have the right attitude. It's like, this is Mickey D's, for God's sakes. You know, you got a suaveness to you. It's like, oh, filet mignon.
It's funny you bring this up because one of the things I was to say that drives me crazy is I have a guy that I know. There's actually two people I know that they swear. They're like they'll be like, oh, man, like blah, 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 smell. Man, I don't. They'll be like, I smelled weird. Like, they're like, normally I never have body odor. And then another friend of mine's like, yeah, my feet don't smell at all. Like, I think anyone who says that is just completely in denial. Like, maybe no one's ever told them their feet. Maybe they can't smell their own.
Yeah, you would need a loved one to kind of tell you that. If you got BO, most people are just like holding their breath, and then the second you leave, turn to somebody and say, can you believe that smell?
I'm a guy, I shower at least twice a day because I'm a guy who could sit here and podcast and I will have pools of sweat under my armpits just from talking. Like, I have to shower. I know that I smell. I know that my feet smell, and I try to keep on top of the freshness.
Yeah, like I, my famous uncle, the one-legged gay uncle Jimmy, he was notorious for not keeping up with his personal hygiene, and it was bad. Like I said, like
well, when you try to get in the shower with one leg, it's not easy.
What you got the freaking crutches to get you in there? Believe me, he smelled like that prior to when he was regular walking. He had that musk. And not the good musk, the bad attitude musk. And then he had the one-legged musk, and then he had the no-legged musk. And
What do you think Elon Musk smells like? Like
rosemary.
Yeah, I agree. He probably smells like something real. Or like it's some kind of smell that your brain can't compute. Like it's something that human has never smelt before.
It's like something scientific that comes from like fish that are like 20,000 leagues under the sea that like only like four humans know about.
Yeah, like when you first hear like a type of music that's never been done before, how it kind of like scrambles your brain, and you got to kind of be like, what am I hearing? That's how the smell, Elon Musk's musk would affect you.
Yeah, like an electric flute. Like it doesn't sound right. You probably heard it once, but that's probably what he smells like, an electric flute.
Yeah, I think if anybody's listening and you claim that you don't smell, please contact the show and we will bring you on here to debate that point. And you need to bring, I think if you say you don't smell, you have to bring an alibi. You need someone who can confirm that you don't smell.
Yeah, we need, I don't even think we interview you first. We interview your friends first to kind of get the gist of, okay, to explain the smell we're about to obtain right here.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel maybe we should make it like a Fox show. Like you get like the celebrities, you get like Paula Abdul, and we'll get somebody from The Office. Not a big star from The Office. Somebody like middle ground or something like
yeah.
that.
And the thing is, you'll contact us and we won't respond right away because what we're going to do is try to do a deep dive into like your email and get your history so we can try to search some of your friends. It's like reverse catfish. We're going to be searching you and trying to figure out and ask people about your smell beforehand. And then the big reveal is during the interview, be like, well, your friend John, do you think he says you smell? John says you smell. And it's kind of like a game show almost. Like, this is another great game show idea here.
We should get Maury Povich to do it because he was famous for "You Are Not the Father."
Yeah. Like, I'm actually glad I smell when I'm supposed to smell because I know when my body's telling me that I'm going to be kind of offensive in the next hour or so. Like there's a time period where I know that like we're over the limit. There's no more cotton or cloth that's going to hide this from the rest of the world.
Absolutely, absolutely. I used to think my burps didn't smell. I did have like one girlfriend that like one time I burped. She's like, "Oh my God, it's disgusting." It's like, I don't smell anything.
So you had burp confidence. Like you were like, don't matter.
Well, not confidence, but like nothing came out. I'm like, oh yeah. Like if it comes out other directions, you go, yeah, it's producing an odor, but I never got anything from the front.
Is it weird that anytime I think of a burp smell, all right, let's see if we think of the same thing. When you think of a burp smelling, okay, on three, I'm going to count to three. Tell me what you picture a burp smelling like. Ready?
All right.
One, two, three. Hot Jeez. Dogs. Ah.
Okay. Well, all right. Food category, Jim. Yeah. Yeah. I could see hot dogs, but
I always think of like hot dog burps. Like I feel like barbecues out in the summer having like, you know, you always have, I don't know, you'll have like your two hot dogs and then like you stay for a while and you kind of start grabbing the cold one that are on the plate and I'll have another one. I'll have a bunless one. Like I just start wolfing down dogs, especially if like alcohol is in the picture. I'll be like, yeah, I'll take another dog. And then before you know it, five, six of them go down in like a 6 hour span.
That's kind of the interesting thing about the hot dogs. Cause like if you're just at home and you're like, I'm too tired to make dinner and you have hot dogs, you have one or two and you're good. You go to a barbecue, you go to a ballpark, like you down like, especially like dollar dog night, you'll be downing like seven of them and you don't blink an eye. You're like, I wonder they're still doing it now.
Yeah, I think the setting affects the hot dog intake. Like barbecue, I think you got a, in your mind, you're planning a barbecue for people. You got to picture at least three dogs per person. Otherwise, you're going to be short because there's going to be a guy like me who's going to scoff down four. There's going to be the drunk guy who has no idea how many hot dogs he ate that night. He's just kind of taking them in. He's kind of sneaking off. Like when everyone's done eating and they're talking, he's kind of sneaking off and grabbing one from time to time. Now, I have also been that guy, so that's why I'm, you know, that's why I'm saying that's a definitely realistic kind of guy. And then you got to picture everyone's going to have like two. So you got to average, I think, three dogs per person, I think, is the rule. So I mean, if you have 20 people coming over, you need 60 dogs minimum.
I don't know, because I got family members that are like, they moved to the burgers. I got some family members that are more burgers than dogs.
All right. Well, what's the burger ratio? Okay. You're planning a party, Mike. You got 25 people coming over. You know, COVID's finally over. You got 25 people coming to the backyard. Now this is an interesting question. The dog to burger ratio is different, because if you're doing burgers and dogs, then maybe those numbers can cut down.
Yeah.
But let's start
with two burger, one dog guy.
All right.
When I go to a barbecue, that's what I go with.
Let's start with burgers. If you're going to feed 25 people, how many burgers are you providing? Safely.
Because
there's nothing
safely?
There's nothing worse than running out of food. Like when there's no food left, that is embarrassing.
Yeah. I mean, going into it, if you have multiple other foods, I'd say bare minimum is 60, but I'd probably aim for around 70.
My man. See, I agree. I'd rather take those burgers and stick them in the freezer and have burgers for another time than have not enough. Because, like I said, I'm usually... When I host a party, I overdo it, but I've been to some parties that underdo it, and it's so depressing.
Oh.
It's so like, there's nothing worse than going to a party that was you were having dinner at and then having to stop on the way home to get something else to eat.
Absolutely. Like, you hold it to yourself, but deep down, you're kind of pissed at that person. Like, you're going to the drive-through or maybe it's like a quick check or something like that, and like grabbing something small, and like, deep down, you're like, God damn, what? Where were the salads? Where were the salads? You know,
something. Yeah. The macaroni salad. Throw some mini hot dogs out there. I don't know. You got to throw some filler, some chips and dip, which is like, warm up. Okay, so now you got 25 people coming over, but you're serving burgers and dogs. What's your safe spot?
Burgers and dogs.
25 people. Burgers and dogs. What do you got? What do you got in the fridge ready for the party?
I'd probably stick with my burger amount somewhere in the 60 to 70.
Ooh, I like it, Mike.
And I'm probably going to have about 40 dogs.
70 burgers. I like you. I'm coming to your barbecue. I'm coming to your barbecue because I know that I'm going to be fulfilled at your barbecue. I'm not leaving empty. I'm going to be maybe over full. And that's a good feeling going home when you're like, God, one too many dogs.
Yeah, I make sure I got the burgers and the dogs. I usually make sure, like you said, the chips and dip is a mandatory. Probably going to have at least like somewhere in the range, depending on like who I got over here. If I have corn, probably somewhere in the 30 range.
Okay.
Is tricky. People who love corn and that number's going to shoot up, or you got people who are just like, nah.
You know what's tricky too? Watermelon's tricky, because you buy a watermelon, you cut it all up, sometimes there's someone takes a piece and the whole watermelon sits, and it's not like you could really take that watermelon and kind of save it for yourself. Like, it kind of goes pretty quick. Like, the watermelon really is not the same after too long out. And then other times people devour the watermelon.
Yeah, I would say watermelon. I would say my number depends on the kids, because the kids are the ones that go back and back and back for the watermelon. I love watermelon, but I don't know many adults that if you got all this hot dog and burger stuff going on, they're packing up on the melon.
Also, there's just a one water. That's what's interesting about watermelon. There's just a one watermelon. You're not getting two watermelons for a party. You're not getting a half a watermelon. You're just getting the melon. That's it. It's kind of like you ride or die with the amount. Oh, the watermelon's gone, or, oh, crap, I got 30 slices of watermelon left.
Yeah, you can't do like those smaller ones. They yeah. never taste right.
Right.
Like
they're open.
Animal form, like it's like no.
Yeah.
No, this is not a what. If I'm not carrying it with two hands, it's not a watermelon. I'm sorry.
How do you feel about seedless watermelon?
I always get it. I hate pits.
Okay, so you go for the nice GMO watermelon, the yeah. perfectly designed party melon.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I like my watermelon without seeds and my goats that have spiders in it, okay?
Ah, well, I know that was a long intro, guys, but what Mike is referring to, we're coming off a really fun episode last week where we had... Now, see, this intellectual conversation is our norm here. This is kind of the road we stay on. Last week, we had a molecular biologist who is engineering goats to produce silk. So, way above our pay grade, basically, is what I'm saying. So, if you're just tuning into the show, don't expect that from us. But you can expect it from sometimes our guests, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, we asked the professor about his burger and watermelon meth, and he was about to hang up, so we talked about the spider goats.
I'm going
to
go out on a limb that a guy like that probably isn't that great at a barbecue. Like, he probably overthinks it and, like, puts out something weird that no one wants, like a sponge cake.
Wait, is that couscous? Yeah. I'm not going to fill up on couscous.
There's a tried and true formula. You got to have burgers and dogs if you want to do something else. If you want to do ribs or chicken or something like that, that's great. But you got to have a couple burgers and dogs in the pocket. Like you got to have some house beer. That's also like a no-no. Yeah. You can't have no beer because someone's going to show up empty-handed, right. And then they're going to start cracking into like your personal stash of good stuff.
Okay. Now, here's another big barbecue question for you. Mm-hmm. What condiments are you putting out there?
Okay. You always got to go mustard, ketchup.
Oh, what kind of mustard, though?
I'm going with the spicy brown, the standard. Every once in a while, I'll put out the... there's this German one, like the coarse mustard that we love. If we have it, I'll throw it out there. I'm also... Because personally... I'm also a guy that always looks for hot sauce, so I'm throwing a thing of hot sauce out there. And then every once in a while, I'll throw some mayo, because I think I'm not a mayo guy at all, but I know people like mayo on things, so I'll throw that out there. And maybe I'll throw barbecue sauce out there. Sometimes I put a little barbecue sauce underneath the cheese on the cheeseburger. That's a good one, like a rodeo burger.
Scott, I think we should like give up on the podcast and just be professional barbecuers. Like we're going back and forth, and we're hitting each other's notes, and I don't feel like the audience really hits our notes.
This is the most in sync we've ever been. This is the most. This is like we don't plan anything really, and this is the most teamwork we've ever done without even talking about it prior. Like we've been looking for reasons to give up the podcast for years. Years like we just like, oh well, I guess we should do it. No, I'm just kidding, but I mean, I think I am of the variety of when I have a barbecue, I'll look in the fridge and start looking at things that, hey, maybe we haven't, like, I'll take things out that I don't know, maybe people might like this. Like, I'll look in the cupboard and be like, oh, there's an old bag of pretzels. I'll you know, not all like open, but like, oh, we haven't touched that. I'll empty. Yep. The kitchen for my barbecue. Like, I'll just take it. Oh, there's an onion. I'll chop some onion up. Like, you know, you just got to throw. Oh, we got a thing of hummus. Someone might eat that. I'll put that out there. You know, I always kind of go over the top because I'm afraid of those conversations people are going to have if I go under the top. The worst Stallone sequel ever.
Yeah, that was so weird, and all where he was throwing arm wrestling matches.
I thought that was when they were toe wrestling. It was weird.
Ooh, now you're intriguing me. I mean, at his age, maybe that would work right now.
Stallone definitely has jacked toes. Like, there'd
be like the story would write itself. Like he's remortgaging life. He's trying to get through it. They're like, a 70-year-old can't just start into toe wrestling now. Just watch me. And he's just like slamming people left and right.
See, this is my take on the story. It takes place 20 years after Over the Top. And Stallone was in a terrible like car accident, and he lost his the ability to move his arms.
He lost Hawkins Son, the trucking company.
Yep, he can't move his arms anymore, and he's like, "What am I gonna do?" And then he's like, he sees a flyer for toe wrestling, and he's like, "Oh my god!" And then you get those great training montages of him like lifting things with his toes and like flex, and then he just becomes the best toe wrestler in the game.
Winner takes it all. Winner takes it all.
And you know,
all over top.
I've never seen jacked toes before, but if there's one man who had jacked toes, it would be Stallone. Like little,
easily
little like biceps on the ends of his toes.
Yeah,
100%.
Like his doctor looks, it's like, "Oh, you have insane bunions." He's like, "No, that's my muscles.
Those are my toe biceps. my toeceps." Wow, we just did 19 minutes on barbecues and toe muscles.
Welcome to Verbal Shenanigans, everybody.
Yes, welcome to Verbal Shenanigans, everybody. A weekly podcast of nonsense, and then people who have actually done things with their lives and have accomplishments and reasons for people to actually tune in and listen. But here's how dumb I am, Mike. So I've been doing this. Speaking of the podcast, been doing like a little thing on Instagram called March of Musicians, where I've been putting up a musician every night.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what's funny, because I think I'm definitely the guilty party, but I'm going to put you in the guilt, and I'm going to put the person that we did this to, or I did this to by mistake. So the other day I'm going to put up, Chris Ballew from the President of the United States of America. Okay. And I'm doing his little, I'm just writing like a little intro, you know, it's March Musicians back on episode, blah, 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 blah. We interviewed Chris Ballew, the President of the United States of America. And years later, we talked about his transition to kids music and becoming Casper Baby Pants, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he became Casper Baby Pants. Now, as I'm typing that, I'm going to go, "Oh, crap." A couple days ago, I put up, "Here's our interview with Chris Barron from the Spin Doctors. We talked about having a number one hit, his life in music, and becoming Casper Baby Pants, doing children's music." Now, I didn't know. So that was up there for about a week. Now, here's the funny part. You liked it, and Chris Barron liked it.
He's like, "Well, I guess I'm multi-talented. I don't know."
Now, does he, you think he reads it? Does someone run his account and just see anything tagged him and likes it? Or does he just like see his face and go, "All right." But yeah. I tagged basically, and I hashtagged Casper Baby Pants in it. I think I put maybe like kids music as a hashtag too. So that shows you the editing, the brains that go into this show. But I guess if our guests are liking it, no harm, no foul. I'm going to start putting crazy things in for our guests. I'm going to be like, "Yeah, he researched spider goats, but he was also the newest member of the Wu-Tang Clan," and just tag them and see what happens.
I feel we should challenge our guests. I mean, we put a lot of work into this show. At the very least, I expect him to read through the description, which is kind of funny because I remember some that like come back at us for like the smallest things where it's just kind of like, well, it was, who was the one that was on It's Always Sunny that we misspelled his name?
Yeah, I forget his name. He played the neighbor in the one episode.
And
he was in Batman.
He was in Valerie and the Hogan Family. He's good friends with Scott Bateman.
Whitting. Steve Whitting?
Yeah. And I remember I sent him the episode and the Instagram photo, and he replied back, "Did you guys purposely misspelled my last name?" We ran around and we switched everything, and I sent it back to him. I'm like, "Oh, I'm so sorry. That was just a common mistake. Nothing after that. You could tell, like, we literally ruined his day because we misspelled his name.
Wouldn't it be funny if that was our big gag? We just misspell our guest names. We're like, oh, we are so clever and funny.
Mark Summers with a K instead of a C.
Yeah, like we've had people.
Matt Pintfield.
Sam Cal Ripken Jr. But yeah, I don't know. We've had people be a little picky on the things. And can you share, put this website on there and that? But yeah, it is what it is. But yeah, so if you didn't know, now Chris Ballew, the President of the United States, and Chris Barron of the Spin Doctors are together as Casper Baby Pants. They're a band.
I love it.
They're forming like a 90s supergroup kids band.
Like all the four-year-olds, their minds are blown. It's like, what is this? Oh, my God. Is that why it's not Casper Baby Pant? It's Casper Baby Pants because there's two of them.
Well, we do actually have a great guest here on the show. We're not going to mess up his name. I'm not going to call him Casper Baby Pants, but I feel like he wouldn't care. Our guest that's coming.
He would probably embrace it. I mean, after talking with him.
Yeah. So Mike, who we got on the show here?
Tonight's guy, we're going to be talking with Diego Garrijo. Some of you might have seen his article in Vice magazine. He's an artist. He's a MMA fighter. He's a bare knuckle brawler. And he's also a part-time drag queen. So we're going to be chatting with him about all his activities, what got him into every world. And he's got a really fascinating story about his life. And it's a really interesting interview tonight.
Absolutely. So really cool guy. Really just interesting down-to-earth dude, actually. So here is our interview with Diego Garrijo.
What's up, guys?
How's it going, Diego? How are you?
Good. How you doing?
I'm
great.
I also love that you're signing on this interview as Mr. Butthole.
It's actually French. It's pronounced Mr. Butthole.
sure it is. So, Mr. Butthole, Diego, welcome to the show, man. Thanks for joining us for a few minutes here.
Thank you for having me.
It's awesome.
Diego, I know we're going to get into your story about your MMA fighting and obviously as being a drag queen. As laid back as the person you are, I've seen in interviews, are you almost surprised how intrigued people are that somebody can like both things and be the same person?
Am I intrigued that people are so into it?
As in, like, are you almost shocked that people are like, what? You can be a fighter and be a drag queen at the same time?
Yeah, I am a little shocked, to be honest with you. It's like when I put on the dress the first time, I didn't, none of these were my intentions, you know. It was just an extension of my art and an exercise in vulnerability, and I didn't know it was going to take off like this.
So let's start with your background. First off, were you like, you know, like a lot of fighters come from, you know, hard upbringings and find it as a, you know, an outlet for some kind of structure and something to strive for, or even sometimes to like kind of get some of that anger out and find some focus and whatnot. What was your background and how did it lead to fighting?
I had a very tumultuous upbringing. I was in and out of jail when I was a kid, you know, messed around with a lot of drugs. I had a kind of self-destructive nature. I was starting to settle down right when I got into MMA, but I was still like, my biggest hobby was motorcycle riding. And at the time it was almost like I was trying to kill myself. Like everybody's like, oh, Diego's going to die on a motorcycle one day, you know? And I was starting to settle down at that time with my wife, and she's like, man, you need a different hobby, like something that's a little bit not as dangerous. And just around that time, I went to my brother's house. It was a Friday night, and we saw a movie called Mark Kerr, The Smashing Machine.
I saw that.
If you guys have
that's a great movie.
It's a great documentary.
Yep.
Yeah. I recommend it for anybody, even if they're not into the sport of MMA. It's just an all-around great documentary. It wasn't like depicting a great lifestyle or anything.
No, but I was gonna say it's one of the ones that like let you peek behind the curtain a little bit. You know, like see the struggles that guy was going through.
Exactly, and it was a tough life. But for some reason, I said, "Yep, that's what I want to do." And that was a Friday night. Monday morning, I was at a gym signing up, and my career just kind of went from there. Like 3 years later, I was fighting professionally.
Now, what age was this?
I got a pretty late start in life. I think I started training around 24, 25.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Especially wow. Nowadays, that's late. Yeah. A lot of these kids are training early.
So you got through about 7 fights, and you know, you had a good record, and then you found out about your detached retina. Out of curiosity, when this happens, did you have like any plan or idea of what you were going to do with your life when they basically said, "No, you can't do MMA anymore"?
No, it was actually came to a very abrupt stop because I dropped out of college to pursue MMA. I had no backup plan. I'm just one of those people that I'm 100% into whatever I do. And from that moment, it was just like eye-opening because I was like, oh, shit, what am I going to do with my life?
And like, what's the jump into that? Like, are you went from, like you said, college, like, do you sign on with the gym? Do you sign on with a trainer? Are you just trying to get in anywhere you can? Like, what is that approach like to say, okay, I'm full time now?
Yeah, correct. I mean, I was always very unorthodox. I am an unorthodox fighter. I'm not very technical. And I think my saving grace is that I'm so unorthodox that sometimes people don't know how to deal with me. You know, even as compared to other southpaws, I'm still hella awkward. So I was looking for careers that would let me have a flexible schedule to train a lot. I still wanted to continue to train a lot. So because I was so awkward, like I didn't feel like I fit in as a coach, you know, which is the natural progression for most fighters that retire.
Right.
So I found a job and it was a process server serving papers. And just around that time, also the movie Pineapple Express had come out. Okay. And I was just like, oh, shit, maybe I'll try this. And I got into serving papers. And all of a sudden, I was making more money than I had made my entire life. And I got very good at it because I was so extreme. I was willing to do things that other people weren't willing to do to get a paper cert. So I became very well versed in all the, you know, disguise wearing and setting up meetings and fooling people. Unfortunately, it was kind of draining on the soul. It's basically delivering bad news for a living. And like after 5-6 years of doing it, I was like almost suicidal. Like I would cry every day before going to work.
Oh, wow. That's terrible. What made you kind of go back into like the fighting game after that? Cause then you went into bare knuckle fighting, if I recall, is that correct?
Yes. Well, the doctor originally after my retina detachment, he didn't say, I'll never clear you to fight again. He just said, I really think you should stop. I said, he said, I think your other retina can go bad too. It has like some slight damage. And if it does, like, I'm never sure we can fix it. And then if you have two shitty eyes instead of one shitty eye, what are you going to do? And I was like, oh, okay. I guess I'll take one, please. You know?
Yeah.
And I mean, being a family man, I thought I was like, man, I'm obligated to provide for my family. But after going through that depression and when I grew up, like watching so much, like, you know, like the early UFCs with no gloves. And then I also saw the movie Snatch, which I believe I saw it before I even started training for MMA it's a Guy Ritchie movie where Brad Pitt is a traveler and he's a bare knuckle boxer. And I was just like enamored with that whole other kind of, you know, mystique behind it. So when I saw that it was going to get legalized by BKFC in the United States, I immediately, you know, talked to my family and they were supportive. They're like, hey, Dad, we know, you know, you're like dangerously close to going blind. But if you really want to do it, you know, the whole family supported me. And I said, you know, I just want to go out there, do a few and then go get back on the couch, you know?
Yeah.
So I had that opportunity. Unfortunately, they didn't call me right back like I had planned. I wanted to do like 6 of them back to back. And they kind of like had me sidelined for a while, which was honestly not cool because I quit my job to fight for BKFC. So now that I have all this press, I would really like to, you know, go out there and maybe have the trilogy with Tom, and then that's it. Call it a day.
Now, what is the balance like for you? Like you mentioned, you're a family man, you got kids, and then, you know, you're there's a scale of this sport that is, you know, insanely dangerous, and people just stepping up, you know, levels after levels after levels over the years and whatnot. You know, balancing that danger and that career and pursuing it, like you said, you're entering it with eye injuries, you're entering it late in the game. How do you balance that family life as far as, okay, being a dad and keeping your health and also, like, you know, earning a living doing that too? How do you balance both of those?
Well, I mean, when I was younger, it was a little bit easier, but then it did get tougher. And that's why eventually I decided, like, hey, I'm going to have to pull the plug on this and get a real job.
Right.
There wasn't enough money in it to keep risking the eyeball damage. Right now I can justify it that, you know, since the media came out and if I can get what I believe I'm worth to fight Tom, it'll be worth the risk just because I love the sport and I want to do it, not really for the money.
Right.
Now, you know, I've embarked on my art career. This is my personal studio. And those are all my paintings. And, awesome. And that's what really brought the joy back in my life when I was depressed, because I realized fighting is fleeting. You know, I had a second go and I'm very fortunate that I did get those BKFC fights, but it can't last forever. I'm 41 years old. Like, you know, there's a limit, but I can continue to paint and create art until the day that I die. So that's what gives me that relief. As far as being a family man, it's like every other working man, you know, you just got to make time for your family. You know?
Right.
And it's like, you got to spend hours at the gym, but you got to, like, make time for your people at home.
Now, are you do you try to hide that or blanket, like, the violence of the sport from your family, or they kind of know 100% what's going on?
Oh, they know 100%. I mean, they see me come home after those first two fights and yeah. I look mangled, you know, so they're like, they know what's going on. But, you know, honestly, my kids are so young that it's like, I still think they don't realize how really dangerous it is,
right.
You know? So, you know, they cope with it like that kind of easy, I think, because they don't realize that, fuck, dad could go blind in the next fight. But other than that, you know, they're very supportive.
So let's talk about, I guess I would say, your other personality. I'm not sure. Do you feel you and Lola are two personalities or the same person, out of curiosity?
Well, Lola is like an alter ego. You know, when I do Lola, I'm doing performance art. That in the drag to me is a performance art that I do, and it's an extension of all my other art projects. But, I mean, there's a part of Lola in me at all times. You know, I was raised by a single mom. Not to say that all gay people are feminine. Some are very masculine, but my mom had a lot of gay friends and there was a very feminine vibe around the house. And I grew up like that with no male father figures. So, you know, in the Latino culture, we have like the machismo culture, which would usually say, don't dress up that boy like that because he'll turn gay or something like that.
Right.
And I didn't have any of that. So, you know, I found a picture recently of me wearing like my mom's, they dressed me up. Obviously I was like a kid in pajamas, but they put my mom's bra and panties on top of my pajamas when I was a little kid. So I was always dancing around, singing, big Whitney Houston fan, big Madonna fan. So that's always a part of my personality. You know, like if a song comes on and it's a song that I like, I'm going to dance and shake my ass, you know, and have a good time. Like, it has nothing to do with my sexuality. It's just what I find entertaining and joyful.
So when did that start? When was the first, I guess, toe in the water into the drag world?
Well, it's funny because it kind of was birthed somehow in the MMA community.
Really?
Jimmy Harbison, which is a very amazing BJJ black belt, an American black belt, took this class on emotional intelligence, and he got Dominic Cruz into it.
Nice.
You know, of course, if you guys are into MMA, everybody knows who Dominic is.
Yeah, he's fighting this weekend.
Dominic, yeah. Dominic, and good luck to him. He's my buddy, you know, like, I love that guy. I've seen his progression, you know, from being a kid from Arizona to a champion, and also the person that he's become to this day, which is like, in his heart, he's an amazing human being, and I believe he learned a lot of that skill in that class that we took. He got our coach into it, Eric Dofiro. Eric Dofiro got me into the class. And during that class, you learn a lot about your emotions and vulnerability. But one of the exercises was doing something creative outside of your comfort zone. And I chose to do drag. I was like, I don't know why. I to this day, I can't tell you why. We were in that room and everybody, and like for me, I was already a painter and living off selling my paintings. And so I was like, something creative but different. And I just said drag and everybody freaked out. Everybody was like, oh my God, that's a crazy idea for this masculine fighter to do drag. And the feedback I got was so great right away that it just, you know, it snowballed into what you see today.
So it was like the first time you showed up. Did you show up in class in drag? Like, is that how that went?
No. So the class, it's like you have 100 days with a personal coach. You set several goals and they keep you accountable. So one of my goals was like, for example, to make 40 paintings in 100 days, you know? And then when I did the drag goal, I said, I'm going to do a live performance in drag because I'm extreme. Everything to the extreme. Right. I don't have fast shit in my life. So I looked it up. Yes. And there was a contest at a cabaret / restaurant that does only drag shows. And it was like a month away. So I had a month to prepare. So in a month I learned how to dance. I took dance lessons in heels. I got my full body wax. I got my ears pierced because I'm so committed that I don't want, you know, the, like a clip on earring to fall off during the performance. I got the badass wig. We went shopping. I picked up a dress. I found the best makeup artist. And so my first live show was a performance in front of like hundreds of people. And it was a contest, just like fighting, you know, like I took it to that level.
I mean, that's an interesting contrast because when you think about it from the mental perspective, you get into a fight, you have to tune out everybody and you have to concentrate on your opponent. But it feels like with like a drag competition, you have to tune out your opponents and concentrate on the audience and judges. Is one more mentally challenging or comes to you at a different angle in some ways when you approach it?
You know what, man? That is a really good analogy that I have not heard before, but that is a really good way of putting it. You have to concentrate more on the audience and that's fucking great. I love that. There was one big similarity, and I'll tell you, it was at the beginning of your fight career. Sometimes you start at smaller venues and the warm-up rooms are smaller, and sometimes you're even warming up with your opponent next to you, you know? So when I showed up to this restaurant, the warm-up room where you get dressed was very small and it had all the contestants in it. And I could tell that everybody was experienced and I was like, the Johnny come lately to the party.
Yeah.
And, but everybody was so supportive. And honestly, I just did the same thing that I do for MMA. Like I just tune it out. I'm very good. I'm not the most technical guy, but I have a very good, mental game where I don't let anything bother me really. And I'm kind of blessed like that, I would say. So I went out there, I performed and I got second place, you know, like on my first time out there.
That's title and, shot right there.
The person I know, right? Like that's like coming out with a bang. So like the person that got first place came up to me and gave me part of the winnings and said, damn, you won. They're like, they picked me because I come here all the time, but like you definitely won that show, which was like for me, like, you know, it was really emotional and like that was really touching that they were like that kind to me. The manager of the restaurant came out and said, hey, that was a great show. You brought a great crowd, the energy. They said, anytime you want to perform Lola, you're welcome back at this place. So like right off the bat, it's like, you know, like I started out with a knockout, you know.
Fight of the night. That's right nice. There. Yeah.
Exactly.
So take us through the progression from there. So you got the high of, you know, winning or coming very close to winning and whatnot. Does your interest in it start to grow and you start to look into outlets like, okay, how can I pursue this drag? I don't know if you call it a career or drag interest. Did you start to go right from there into getting into more?
Yeah, kind of, because the feedback was so good right off the bat. That I was like, man, there's something here. And I also started getting back a lot of people saying, this is really inspirational. Yeah. Some people were saying like, I was getting DMs from other fighters in the world. And like, one was saying like, hey, I'm gay, but this is giving me the confidence to come out and tell the guys at the gym, you know, like, cause I see you being yourself. And, you know, not that that has anything to do with my sexuality, but it's just saying people just me being myself is inspiring for other people to do other things. Maybe some of them is like just the courage to go to the gym, you know, some to tell their parents that they're gay, or for some people to try a different fetish in the bedroom or something, even though like those are completely separate things. I'm just saying it affects people different ways, you know?
Right.
But when I saw that, that was more rewarding than anything else, all the encouragement. And it still continues ever since the Vice article came out, and yep. things have gone pretty much nuclear. Like I'm getting TV and movie offers and stuff like that. So, but the most rewarding thing is that, yeah, every people daily reach out and say they find it inspiring. So I want to continue to do it. But the way I did continue it, to go back to your question, I'm sorry, I ramble so much.
No,
but,
fascinating.
Yeah, I'm the talker, guys. so basically what happened was I wanted to keep it in my art catalog. So what I started to do was not so much performance shows with cabarets and stuff like that, but I still haven't been in a major gallery, and that's a big goal of mine, but I was doing small gallery shows. And on the opening night, I would show up dressed in drag. So people would see me, you know, like, and I'm being vulnerable, I'm being myself, I'm being authentic, and they're getting to see my works of art, which I'm, you know, putting there to display. And I'm also putting myself out there, you know, so.
It's awesome.
People found it pretty refreshing.
Do you, like, as far as your, we haven't really touched on your art yet. You know, you got the three paintings behind you. What is your, like, do you have a specific medium? Like, it's hard to tell if it's like charcoal or oil paint or not, but do you have like a medium you work in, or something you kind of, I don't know, like a niche you go for?
Yes, I consider myself a mixed media artist, and like I do have paintings that, you know, use like different kinds of media on it, but the most of the stuff I use is acrylic. It dries very fast compared to oil. Oil can take months to correctly dry, and I like to move fast. Like I can finish a painting in a day, you know, so I like to do lots of layers on some paintings. So I prefer acrylic, but I do sometimes use pastels and mix things up in there. And as my career progresses, and I have, hopefully, if, you know, I can continue to be down this path and be successful and have more time to spend in the studio creating, then it'll open up to even sculpture and all kinds of 3D art.
Was that something you were into all along, art, like through your whole MMA thing, like, or was this something that found you later on?
Well, that's a great question, because the very first thing I thought I was going to be in life was a career artist.
Oh, okay.
My name's Diego. I was named after Diego Rivera, a famous Mexican muralist. He was born in the same region of Mexico. When I was a little kid, I carried my crayons everywhere. And in high school, I was committed to going to art school to become a graphic designer, because I didn't understand the value of fine art, and I just wanted to make a living in art, which at the time I saw as graphic design.
Right.
I didn't have a good support structure at home. I got into crime. I got into drugs and quickly lost track of school. I got kicked out for fighting. I went on a downward spiral, was in and out of jail for a while. And like I said, the first thing that pulled me out of that was MMA, my passion for MMA that developed. And I didn't get back into art until after I retired the first time. And that's when I rediscovered art and said, oh shit, this is what I was meant to do my entire life.
Wow.
Now, we had on the show before a transgender battle rapper by the name of No Shame. And she talked to us about like going through battle rapping, and brought up kind of like, she never heard people try to like rap about her gender, and she almost wished it would, because that would basically be a sign that they didn't come prepared and not ready for what's coming up. I'm just kind of curious, you said from MMA, it led you to the drag queen kind of work. Have you had any pushback where somebody's like, you're just a drag queen or whatever, where it's almost like, well, if you're going to get in the ring with me, you're going to have a tough time?
You know what? It's funny, but I've gotten almost zero negative feedback.
That's,
you know,
great.
Like I haven't had any scheduled. Thank you, I respect that. And I haven't had any really fight scheduled since the whole thing took off, but my last opponent, Tom Showoff, which is a great guy, you know, like we had a little bit of a disagreement at the first weigh-ins, but I think we squashed it. I really like Tom, and I think he's a great fighter. You know, even him, he sees my Instagram and he goes on there and he says, man, I love that you can just be yourself, you know, like, and so I think Tom's a great guy. And even from my opponents, I haven't heard very much. As far as like strangers, you know, I'm not the most technical guy, but I am definitely one of the toughest guys in San Diego. So I don't know, but I don't get a lot of negative feedback. I don't know if that has something to do with it.
Well, if you get that trilogy, why don't you fight in drag and just blow the whole MMA world apart with with a win in drag? You talk about press. You'll get press for days.
Yeah, I mean, I see why people are curious about that, but I'm kind of opposed to that idea
I'm just kidding.
I know most people are, but when they say that, but the truth is, like, I take it as a performance art very serious,
right?
And I also take fighting very serious, so I don't want to get into that WWE aspect of it, you know, I want to, you know, keep it very respectful to both communities, you know, and it's very nice when they overlap. I love that some of my drag fans are getting into MMA and saying, whoa, we never saw this. And they're excited to see it. And it's a whole new world, you know, and the same thing. There's some MMA fans that look into drag and be like, wow, this is interesting, you know?
So how do you balance your art, the drag stuff, the fan? Like I asked you about family and MMA. So now throw in family and training and try to be, you know, try to stay fit. How do you balance that whole, you know, life?
Oh, man, ever since the Vice article came out, it's been a nightmare. It's really been like on the phone all day with like media and press. And I haven't had a moment to work out. You know, I still eat very good and I feel like that keeps me in shape. But I feel like this wave is going to crest. And then, like, of course, you know, like the story's not going to be in the media forever. And things are going to slowly go back. And I'm going to start going back to training, you know, all the time. Even whether I'm fighting or retired or not, I'm always going to stay in shape. I love it. I love fucking training. I love sparring. I love jiu-jitsu. I love lifting weights. I hate fucking running, but I still do it.
Now, speaking of things you love, I can tell you are very much a fan of your tattoos on your body. So I'm kind of curious, a three-parter. What was the first one you got? What's the most sentimental to you? And what's one you kind of look back and go, maybe I shouldn't have got that one?
All right. So the first one I got, I was 15 years old in a kitchen and I got a 3-hour back piece. That's when the Red Hot Chili Peppers was the coolest shit in the world.
Hey, they're still...
So I got like a 3-hour tribal. So imagine this kid just walks into gym class with a fucking like back piece.
Yes. And, like blood sugar, you know, sex magic on your back.
Well, I'm sorry.
Like the blood sugar sex magic logo on your back.
It wasn't the logo, but it was like all those guys had tribals, right?
So
it was like, you know, like just like Red Hot Chili Peppers. I'm going to get a tribal like Anthony Kiedis. It's just fucking huge, like 3-hour tattoo by a fucking, you know, scab wizard in the kitchen that didn't know what he was doing. And since I've had it like kind of covered with a bigger tribal, or a bigger black, you know, but it's kind of, you can kind of still see it.
Probably a different artist too, right?
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. Many, many moons later. What was the second tattoo? What was it?
The most sentimental to you.
Most sentimental? I have several tattoos that represent my children. I have some that they have drawn.
Oh, cool.
So pretty much all of those. I have 3 children. Let me see. I don't know if you guys could see this one right there. My daughter drew that. I just found that drawing. I thought it was really cool. So I tattooed that on there myself. My son's going to hate this, but if you could see it, it says Machine Gun Max.
Nice.
When he was a little kid, he never did like a single fart at a time. They were always rapid fire. Like when he was a baby.
the original Mr. Butthole. Like
Machine Gun Max. Yes, exactly. And I don't know. He hates the nickname. I think it's the baddest nickname in the fucking world, Machine Gun Max, you know?
Absolutely.
And I got some other ones, like, let me see, is it on this side? I don't know if you could see it, but it's like a cartoon character that like resembled my youngest daughter. She would wake up in the morning, her hair would always be like a fucking knotted mess and shit. So like I got that with her name there. I have another one I got my pants on, but it's like another one that my son drew that's supposed to be the Hulk, but it's pretty hilarious.
It's pretty awesome, Diego. It's cool that you like you're able to, you know, it seems like you're able to stay yourself through all the things you're interested in too. Like you say you're unorthodox in fighting, you know, maybe unorthodox doing drag, unorthodox in your art. And I think that's pretty inspiring as far as like, you know, sticking to your guns, if you will. So we really, really enjoy talking to you. Would love to have you back on in the future. So what are you working on now? And like, where can people find you to check you out? Like, what's the best place for people to go see all things Diego?
Yeah. This is a real short answer for the other question, because I know he had a third part.
Do
you have anything you regret?
Yeah.
And just to not leave you hanging, I know I have haven't counted them, but at least 6 dicks somewhere spread out across my body. And I regret 0 of them. I fucking love them. I don't know if you can see it. I have like a little dick right there on my finger. I don't know. And that one, it's like when people aren't looking, I always like take pictures of them far away and I'm like putting it in their mouth and shit. It's like the best investment I've ever made. Like if you're stuck in traffic and you're just like sticking a dick in people's faces, I'm like, I totally recommend it. I don't regret any of my tattoos. I love all of them.
The first back piece was the same answer for the regret one, right?
The most painful. Like, fuck, I don't know. Like, I don't regret it. Every memory is great, you know, absolutely. Good or bad. So I'm happy. But you said, what's the next step or how can people get a hold of me?
Yeah, what's going on in Diego's world?
For me, you know, if the money works out, the timing works out, I'm going to do the fight with Tom, get the trilogy. You know, we have the rubber match pending. After that, I'm definitely going to ride off into the sunset and, hang up my spurs from fighting. The next logical step is just continue my art career. I got a lot of interest from Hollywood for documentary, biopics, TV series, both scripted and unscripted about my life. Because they see the Lola thing and the fighting thing and they're, that gets their attention. But then when we have these sit down meetings and I tell them about all the things I've gone through life, they're like, holy shit, this guy has a story. So all that shit still has to come out, you know, and the more press I get, the more interest I get from Hollywood. So for in the future, like, I don't know, you might see me pop up on Netflix or Amazon Prime with something.
Awesome.
For everybody out there, I'm still making a living, you know, from either doing tattoos. I do have my own private tattoo studio. And if you follow me on Instagram, you'll see that daily I usually show what tattoos I'm working on.
Awesome.
On my other page, which is called Let's Add More Black, because I love black work. I love just, you know, if you ask me what we should do with the tattoo, I'm just going to say, let's just add more black to it. It's going to make it always better.
That's awesome.
But other than that, I don't have like an online shop or a website yet. I'm very like focused on one thing, which is just my main Instagram right now, which I hate, but it's like a necessary evil because that's how everybody in Hollywood found me, you know, through Instagram. Otherwise, how would they contact me?
Right.
And just selling paintings, you know, and I might get into my paintings are sometimes out of other people's price ranges. So I might start making some smaller drawings. I would just want, if anybody wants a piece of my art to own, and I would love to be able to cater to everybody. So just Diego Garrijo. I'm fucking shadow banned. So if you're going to find me, if you don't find a link in somebody's podcast or something, you got to put my whole name, no space, into the search bar, Diego Garrijo. And then that's the only way I pop up because the algorithm doesn't fucking like me. They've pulled down too many of my posts for sexual content. And they're just like,
that's the worst.
Yeah. What they do is they hide your content. So like so many people can't see it.
They do. We definitely get that with like promoting certain things. It's like, how the hell is this not seeing anybody, you know? But
well, Diego, we really had a great time talking to you. So my final question to you is, when you picked the name Lola, just out of curiosity, what was the list of names that you had that you settled on Lola, or was it always going to be Lola?
Okay, this is a great question too. So because my fighting name, for those that don't know, is Diego Dos Pistolas Garrijo, which means for those that are completely zero Spanish,
I was gonna
two
say.
Guns, you know?
Yeah.
And so Diego Dos Pistolas has been my fighting name for a while. My wife, we were discussing my first upcoming show, and our first daughter named Isabella, we were originally going to call her Lola, which is short for usually Dolores and in different cultures, different names, but we were just going to call her Lola. We loved the name and the nickname. And out of the blue, she just turns to me. She goes, "What if we call you Lola Pistola?" And I just went, "Boom!"
There it is. That's a home run. There it is.
I said, "That's a home run. You hit it, you know." And I was like, just super in love with it and the way it played off my fighting name, Lola Pistola. Those pistolas.
That's great.
Can't go wrong.
What is your What is your song of choice? Like when you perform, like what are we? If we go see your show, what's your jam?
It depends on the outfit. Like I actually, you know, if I see an outfit that I like, I put a song to that outfit. Or if I have a song that I like, I try to pick the outfit to the song. So some of the songs that I like to perform, you know, I'm Latino. I was born in Mexico. I was brought to the United States as a kid. I was actually smuggled across the border. So I come from the, you know, Mexican community. Where cholo life, gang life, I grew up in all that shit. So sometimes I like to dress up like a chola. And when I do, I like to do something hip hop based. I like, I did WAP at a friend's birthday party recently. a song that I love to fucking lip sync is Lizzo's Truth Hurts.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that song. My first show, I was going to do a Whitney Houston song. I'm Every Woman, which I don't know, might be played out in the drag community.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's probably a first round draft pick right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's I love that song. I felt, and then I went shopping for the dress and I was going to go for a Whitney vibe. And then I fell in love with another dress. And it was very tropical. So then I said, I'm going to pick a different song because I love this dress so much. So I went from Whitney Houston to Celia Cruz, which is a salsa singer nice. In the Cuban community. And I picked the song La Vida es un Carnaval, which is like life is like a carnival. And it's a very tropical song with a very good beat. And
that's awesome.
That was that's how I got on stage the first time.
But I love it.
Always the outfit has to match the song, always.
Diego, thank you so much for your time, man. We wish you luck. You get that fight and you get that win and you're able to ride off in the sunset and do even better things. So thanks so much for joining the show and stay safe out there.
It was a pleasure, guys. You know, I've been doing a lot of press lately and you guys had some really good questions. And I love Michael's analogy about the you focus on your opponent versus focusing on the crowd. That was amazing. I loved it.
Every once in a while, something moves in there. Like, you know, like he every once in a while you get like
we jump. All have our moments. You know that saying, they say even a broken clock is right at least twice a day.
Exactly. You know? Yep. Sun shines on the dog. Number one done.
Can't wait for number two in 12 hours.
All right, Mike, Diego Garijo.
What would you think you would get into first, bare knuckle brawling or drag queen?
At this point in my life, drag queening. Not even a question. I don't want to get punched in the face at all.
Yeah, but you'd have to shave your lovely beard there.
I don't think you can pull it off. Why can't I be the bearded drag queen lady? You're telling me the drag queen community is going to discriminate against me?
I feel they purposely go out of their way to look feminine. It's not even on the grasp of you can't do this because I think the whole goal is to look as feminine as possible.
That's not fair. That's not that. No? In 2021, I don't even know what you call this. This is a group of people who have been, there's been a lot of prejudice to over the years. And so, but they're going to be prejudiced.
Yeah, I wouldn't fight that group. I don't think it would turn out well for you, to be honest.
Dude, some of those drag queens, look, Diego would destroy me. You know, they're wearing heels and stilettos. I could bear, after a day of being on the computer, my back and neck are sore and, but this is like reverse discrimination. So now the LGBTQ or drag queen community is being prejudiced against the big white cis male, if you will, with the beard.
I mean, maybe we calling out anybody who's a drag queen who has a beard. Come on the show, let us know. I mean,
this is where
maybe I'm misunderstood and don't understand the world as it is right now.
This is where we need like old school Mike Berlow tweets. Hey, drag queens with beards.
Very specific hashtag.
Yeah.
Very specific.
Yeah. No, I would do that way quicker than bare knuckle. There's no part of me that wants to get punched in the face and kicked in the calves and the legs. Like, there's zero interest in that for me.
Yeah, I'd probably do the same thing. The closest I came to fighting is like in like junior high or whatever, and that 90% of those high school fights are just shoving back and forth. There's no skill whatsoever. If any of them had skills, it'd have been over in 2 seconds.
We were supposed to do a podcast from a drag show years ago. It never actually went down, but it was definitely in the talks. We were supposed to go and do a podcast and be in the audience and interview all the drag queens. Kind of upset that never happened, actually.
I'd be totally down for that. No, I mean, that should be our big... When you and I are finally in the same room together, that should be the scenario. Drag queen event.
Okay. What about a drag queen barbecue? I just invite you over to my house and surprise you where I combine both of them.
See, now I'm sold. I mean, I'm thinking about just like calling work and be like, listen, I'm gone for Friday until next Tuesday. I got plans. I know the burgers and the dog math is going to be good. Not even an ounce of a fear.
Yeah.
I'll see you all when I get back.
Like, there's another show idea. Drag Queen Barbecue. Like, it's just a great concept. Like, everyone in there, like, decked out, you know, head to toe, and those amazing decorative outfits, but just, you know, just chilling, eating burgers and dogs, and just trying to be completely normal, no crazy singing at least at the beginning, but everyone just showing up for a barbecue, like, hey, I brought a watermelon, hey, I brought a pineapple, and then just see where the night leads us. Because I don't think you can get 20 drag queens in a barbecue without it, like, ending in some kind of amazing, like, karaoke session or something really cool.
There is zero possibility a drag queen barbecue, you will leave there saying, damn, I was bored.
Yeah.
I couldn't wait to leave there. There's zero possibility. And it,
you know, like,
I'm not even trying to not make any jokes or anything about that. Like, literally, there's no way you can have that kind of personality to do something like that and not have a personality to have an amazing barbecue.
Yeah, like, you know those days where you have to, like, okay, we're stopping at blah, blah, blah's barbecue, but then we also got, like, our nephew's birthday also. So we got to do, like, a quick stop here and leave. Like, if you had the drag queen barbecue at 1 and your nephew's birthday at 4, you would be devastated leaving the drag queen barbecue.
No, I would just Venmo him some money and be like, enjoy your birthday, Uncle Mikey. We'll see you next week.
Right.
Not moving.
And then they look at, like, your social media. You're just, like, losing it with drag queens, eating hot dogs.
I would literally be like, I don't care. This is more important than your birthday, nephew. I don't care. I'll tell you to your face.
All right. So if I invited you to my son's first, we're having a big first birthday party. Yeah. And then Diego messages you tonight, and he's like, hey, the same day, we're having a drag queen barbecue. Done. You're not coming to Shay's birthday party.
I might not even tell you. I may not even say a syllable to you.
So we would go on for years and years and years after this, knowing that you went to a drag queen barbecue, and you never bring it up on the podcast ever.
I mean, I don't want to insult you, but at the same time, I know that party's going to be more hot, more amazing than Shay's first birthday.
So,
I mean, let's be honest. You love your son.
I do.
But if it was somebody else's 1-year-old, you're not going to tell me those two options, which one you're going to pick. I already know the answer.
So instead of bringing my son this great gift that you have in a plastic bag from Kroger's and... Uh-huh. And a Father's Day card that you picked out of your dresser drawer.
And don't forget the receipt. The receipt that has nothing to do with said card will be in there.
You know, I really wish I kept that receipt and we were able to, like, dissect all the other things that were on it and kind of think about what your mindset was going through the store.
I mean, you tell me there was shrimp on there, so I was doing the Christmas food shopping there. I was making... I was making a veggie casserole, I believe, for Christmas. I forget what else did we have. We had a veggie casserole. We had a ham. We had shrimp.
Now we're really exciting the audience. Yeah, what else did you have for your Christmas dinner, Mike? Yeah. Please go on.
People, if you came here for entertainment, no, I'm going to remember what I had for dinner.
Well, where do I go into my next bit? What did Scott have for lunch today? It's going to blow balls apart.
I want a holiday lunch. I want to know about your Arbor Day lunch, okay? None of that regular lunch stuff.
Mike, let me ask you, do you believe in an afterlife?
Yes.
Okay. So what do you
don't have a specific answer? I'm spiritual more than anything. So I don't know what's going to happen. I'm not declared somebody's right, somebody's wrong. But I think when I shut my eyes for one last time, I'm going to wake up in something new.
So what would you like to happen? Like, what would your afterlife, perfect afterlife be? Other than a drag queen barbecue.
I guess either A, pick up my life with my loved ones that I lost before.
Good one.
Kind of, I don't want to say reincarnation, but just like come back as like a baby and live a new life. You know,
yeah.
Well,
I'm glad you brought that up. Okay. Mm-hmm. Because have you ever heard of something called a Dyson sphere?
I literally heard of the name and I can't even give you one definitive way to describe it. I do know I have heard of that phrase, but I have no clue what it is.
Well, I thought this would be a good kind of conversation here because Dyson spheres, the key to resurrection and immortality, creating an afterlife or a simulation of one would take vast amounts of energy. Some scientists think the best way to capture that energy is by building mega structures around stars. Okay. So this is where we got to get Dr. Randy Lewis back for a minute. But So in a 2018 paper, researchers Alexei Turchin and Maxim Chernyakov published a paper outlining various ways humans might someday be able to achieve immortality or resurrection. One way involves creating a simulated afterlife in which artificial intelligence would build simulations of past human lives. Getting the necessary power for the simulation might require building a Dyson sphere, which is a theoretical megastructure that orbits a star and captures its energy. You know, is there an afterlife? People have been debating that for absolutely ever. However, can humans create an afterlife? Some scientists think so. So those two Russian guys wrote a paper saying science might someday make immortality and resurrection possible, called the Immortality Roadmap. The project describes the ways people might be able to extend lifespan or life forever, from using cryonics to freeze themselves, which we've had on the podcast, to constructing nanobots for treatment of injuries and cell cyborgization. I'm guessing that means, you know, machines.
Tony Stark.
Yeah. Gotcha. But the Immortality Roadmap mentions one particularly grandiose plan to immortality. Outlined in Plan C of the project, the idea is to create a simulation of humanity's past through artificial intelligence that's available to digitally reconstruct people. Okay, the AI would use DNA and other information about individuals to create models of those individuals within a simulation, allowing recently deceased people to experience another chance at life, or at least an approximation of life. The main idea of resurrection simulation is that if one takes the DNA of a past person and subjects it to the same developmental condition, as well as correcting the development base on some known outcomes, it's very possible to create a model of a past person which is very close to the original. Okay, what are you thinking so far?
That's a lot for... Basically, it sounds like you're downloaded into a computer almost.
Pretty much.
Like the Lawnmower Man.
Yeah. No Lawnmower Man. What a classic that was.
No Lawnmower Man 2, but still.
After the moment of death, the simulated person is moved into some form of the afterlife, perhaps similar to his religious expectation where he meets his relatives. But would a digital copy really be you, or rather a fundamentally different digital being that resembles you? What about other people that inhabit the simulation? Would they be real? And would people actually want to repeat their lives over again, perhaps forever? Okay. So basically, Mike, from what I understand, now this is me trying to explain this.
Okay.
I'm assuming, so your consciousness is able to be, you know, and your experiences and your DNA is basically able to live on afterwards and become part of a simulated life with other beings that you've come across. And you're kind of, your personality, your experiences, your life goes on again.
Like, do I get to pick and choose which things change in my life, or is it literally one for one?
I don't know. I guess that would be based on the simulation, like kind of what happens in that simulation. I don't know if that means like you would live the exact same life, because that would be kind of boring. Like, I like your idea of being able to live completely over again, because God, I would do 1,000 different things different, but I would all, it's funny, because when you say that, I would also want like my life experience, but be able to place it in like a new body and start again. Like, I would want to know what I know and then start life again.
Yeah, I want to be like a baby that just pops out and he already knows, yeah, I did like 350 podcasts. So
I feel like that would suck though for a while. Like, if you were a baby and like you just couldn't control your limbs and couldn't do anything, and you have to go through all these baby stages, but inside you have all this amazing life knowledge.
Ooh, yeah, that sounds like that sleep paralysis we talked about.
Yeah, that's kind of like purgatory, right? Like, okay, I guess you could say like you start thinking like 15, 16, right? I don't know.
Okay.
I guess that's when I started to actually like have like deeper thoughts than just being a kid, you know?
I don't know. I'd want to be 6 and have my imaginary friends back, if you recall.
You could. You could. They could all be, maybe in the simulation, they're real.
They could be real.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Yes. Woody Woodpecker would be in my room. That'd be amazing.
But that would probably alter the path of that simulation's life.
So we got like a butterfly effect
exactly
going here. So yeah, like everything we change by rule changes everything else.
Gone. Okay. Yeah, I don't know. Like everyone like in their life, like as you get older is saying, man, I want to live for a lot longer than I have left. Right. You're always saying, oh my God, I'm 40. Maybe I got 40 good years left, 45 good years, you know, and that old expression, like time starts flying as you get older. Like it's true. You know, you start to realize how short a year is when you're a kid. Summer vacation felt like 48 months off. You're like, oh my God.
Time was just insane. Like there was zero thought to school is coming back. Like it was almost like death-defyingly shocking, where it's like, what do you mean September's in 2 days?
Yep. Like you would, even like in those last weeks, you'd be like, well, I still got 6 full days to do anything I want. Like summer just was always eternity. Whereas now you could be like my dad, who will be like, well, you know, it's March 17th, St. Patrick's Day. Before you know it, it'll be the summer, and then before you know it, Christmas will be here. It's like, Dad, that's literally like a year. You know, that's like literally counting through a year. That's kind of how the year goes. So
that's kind of how it works. Like, I mean, maybe you can spice it up and come leap year.
Yep.
You know, you go through your January, but this February, you go through 29 days.
Yeah, like I don't want to be counting. Oh, before you know it, it's spring, and then another year goes by, and then you get stuck in the cycle of just counting the seasons again. But I don't know. Would you like to just, given the option, would you like to live on, quote unquote, or would you like to just die and see what happens? Lawyer comes to your door today. He's like, I got, you know, if you sign this paper, you have a possibility of living on, and your consciousness basically goes from your body to another body, quote unquote. You may, there might even be one day where they can take your consciousness and brain and sticking it in a body that was grown in a lab, and then you got a new life.
A question I have is there any way to kind of view the simulation outside of the simulation?
Oh my God, we're getting into like Matrix 3 territory here.
Well, that's kind of like my thing, because if you tell me I'm going through all this stuff, you're pretty much just telling me I got the same scenario as the afterlife, where I don't know really what's going to happen. And then I guess I also question, do I start, like kind of what we said, when would I have like my knowledge from my previous life? Is it literally I'm living my life same old, and it's Groundhog Day? Mm-hmm. Or am I going in there with like some of Michael Berlew in there to kind of go, okay, I know this, don't want to go that path, let's go over here.
I don't know. Like, what if one day it gets to the point of like, okay, you know, like the fear that someone has of having like a major surgery, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to have heart surgery. You're completely nervous about it. You kind of don't know what's going to happen, but you're taking a leap of faith that the doctors know what they're doing, and they're going to take care of you, and you're going to come out the other side. But that time period is the question mark, you know, and you live on after that. What if it was like the equivalent of that? You're going to the doctor, you go to sleep, per se. Before you know it, you're downloaded either into a new body or into a computer that you never would know is a computer. You just have become, you're just in a new life. You would never know it's actually a computer.
See, the thing is, a computer can act up.
Yeah.
Computer is man-made technology, and man-made technology screws up. Like, they'll put me in this computer system, and I'll realize they use Windows Vista, and everything is not good.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
You, like, go to drink a beer, and then you get that, like, loading sign, and you can't get it to your mouth.
Pinwheels happening. It's like, come on, I'm thirsty!
Gotcha.
What do you mean I need more RAM?
Yeah. Like, I always thought it would be amazing if you died. Like, I would just like to sit back and rewatch my life like a movie. Like, where I get to sit in a comfortable chair with plenty of hot dogs and burgers and a nice cold beer and just be able to view everything that I did in my life, where I'm not able, the things I forgot, the things I don't remember, all the mistakes, the hard times, and just view it on a screen from a third person perspective. I would love to do that. Like, I'd be okay if that was part of the afterlife.
Once, if you were allowed to do that, but you have four of your snarkiest comedian friends come in and they have to riff it.
Oh, God.
And you have to hear about
it. It's like Mystery Science Theater, but with like,
yeah,
your life. Oh, yeah. I mean, there'd be parts of my life that I would have a real hard time watching, but I think, God willing, it's a good movie and doesn't come to an ending that no one can figure out. You know, I think that would be an amazing experience. Like, what if the afterlife is your exact lifespan, but you watch it in real time? I feel like Joe Rogan right now, like I'm taking mushrooms or something like that. Like, I feel like we went from burgers and dogs ratio to now talking about simulated afterlife.
Hmm. I don't know. I don't know what I would do. Hmm.
Like, do you
I think I would just take my chances with the afterlife, to be honest?
Yeah. Like, do you think the afterlife might be like, sitting in a cloud
going yeah. to a pearly gate yeah. with a guy wearing a toga and sandals saying, come on in.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'd like to think it puts your brain somewhere where you can just enjoy whatever it comes up with.
Yeah. Like, isn't That's it interesting that every human who ever lived has thought about that thought? Maybe a million other thoughts that you've had no one's ever thought of, but every human who's ever lived has thought about what happens after this. What happens after this?
I think the nicest way I heard about how to consider what it's occurring next, I kind of heard it from a Betty White interview, and she was like 70 at the time, and not even, she's 99 right now, 70 or 80, something like that. Someone asked her, you fear the afterlife? She said she had a family member who said, you know, it's the one secret that nobody knows. So how we deal with it is when somebody dies, you tell the kids and all, well, we don't know the secret of the afterlife. Aunt Sophia, she just learned the secret. And that's kind of the way to look at it.
It's not bad. It's not bad. See, I don't know. I also think I might agree with you. I might take my chances with natural death and then be like, oh, shit, I'm just in a box.
Because I feel anything that's man-made, we're going to get somebody evil in there, and they're going to do stuff. And
yeah,
it's
like a Black Mirror episode. You get stuck in that afterlife where you're not allowed to die. I guarantee they probably did an episode like that. All right, so, I mean, we covered a lot today. We covered a lot. We covered the importance of burger to dog ratio.
Mm-hmm.
We covered drag queen barbecues. We discovered Diego's life. And then we talked about the afterlife. What if the afterlife, like, what if we're not doing right and this is hell actually, and you just have to what if we're stuck podcasting together for eternity, just like this, just me and you on a screen, and we have to podcast forever?
It'd be intriguing. I would feel like we'd have certain things, like our worst guest would always be the one showing up every week, it's like, Mike, Sean Kemp has contacted me. It's just a matter of him getting into the Zoom call. We got this.
Oh, just little teases. Yeah.
It would just be the infinite, oh, we're finally going to get something, and then...
Yeah. And then, like, when you're just completely out of stories, like those weeks where you have no clue what to talk about, and it's just that for eternity. You know, or when you're tired and we accidentally scheduled, like, 3 interviews. Just that all the time. Like, you're just looking at the schedule, and it's like, oh, man, we got another one at 8. And you're like, oh, I'm not prepared. I have no clue what this guy does.
That would be insane. And, like, he would just randomly show his people, like, who the hell is this? And he's just like, just interview them. They're your insurance? What?
Anyway, what a fun episode tonight. I really... really enjoyed myself, Mike. Really enjoyed myself.
Yeah, I think we forgot to say this was our 350th, Scott.
That's great. That's right. 350. Man, that means my wife has not listened to an episode in 300 episodes.
Well, my wife listened to Chris Lucas because he was Disney. She listened to Toby Philpott because Star Wars / Disney. Sean Kanan, she was allowed to ask a question in there.
Did she ever listen to Mike Stern, the Pixar animator? That would be a good one for her.
I don't know if she did.
Essentially, she's just listened to anything but us, like, for reasons.
Kristen Picciolini, she actually shared out that episode also to some friends. Katra Corbett. I mean, for the most part, it's
her interest.
It helps her. Right. If it's her life, she's like, sure, I'll listen. If it's anything else...
That's how it goes. Yeah. So 350 episodes. Wow, man. You got 350 more in you?
I mean, the guy with the pitchfork is telling us we do, so.
Do 350 more now.
Come on, Satan.
I'm tired.
Can we just do a double tomorrow?
Let's get out of here, bro. This was a good one. Anything to promote?
Speaking of things my wife loves, we'll talk about Christine Rush with Magic Travel. She is doing more and more Disney trips, Universal trips. She's an all-around vacation planner, wonderful person. I'll be meeting her for the first time in October, Scott, during the big Disney 50th anniversary.
Oh, so, not like at the drag queen barbecue or something fun.
No,
back at Disney.
Like, you will literally text me on September 30th. No, dude, you're never going to guess what's going to happen and be like, no, enjoy.
Mike, I noticed you're away in like 2 weeks. Where are you going?
Places.
Yeah, where are you going in March and October now?
Christine with but Christine's a wonderful person. She's gotten us great rates. She has gotten us into the best parks at great prices. Absolute pleasure. If you're looking to book a trip to Disney, Universal, or anywhere, she can help you out. Christine at magictravel.com.
So you're saying she does do trips to other places, because you said anywhere.
Yeah, she is a vacation planner as well. And also she's certified to do Universal trips as well. I don't know about SeaWorld. That's a running joke and all. I always ask her, who the hell plans for SeaWorld? And she just laughs.
So, like, you Disney people just, like, laugh at the SeaWorld people? You're like, I would never go to that piss-poor park.
Well, let's start with us Disney people. I don't care what you say. I'm not a Disney
person. Mike, why don't you tell us what you're wearing today?
That would be my wedding shirt that my wife made.
Right. You think I don't see the ears sticking up on the chest.
Well, speaking of the devil, she's running down here. I must have said Disney four times.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
I hear Disney?
Yep. I'm promoting Christine for the podcast, honey.
Yeah.
I'll be with you in a minute.
Yep. So, you're not a Disney person at all, Mike. But
you know my stance, so.
Yeah, your stance. We all know your stance if you've been listening for a while. The denial, one day one episode is just going to be like an intervention. I'm just going to bring on a bunch of people and you're going to sign on and you're like, oh crap, there's like 12 people talking to you about your Disney problem.
I don't have that kind of problem.
This is like your man pup denial, but this is an actual one.
I keep saying I'm not a man pup. I'm a Disney person. I'm just a regular man who likes sports. And
anyway, I'm going to promote former guest of the show. One of my favorite guests we ever interviewed, Zane Lamprey, famous for Chug. Now I'm blanking on the names of his shows. Drinking Made Easy, which is my favorite one. Zane Lamprey also does comedy and kind of a show. He is going out on tour, going to 90 breweries across the country. So he's going to be doing comedy shows there all through the next year. He's actually coming here in New Jersey to Bolero Snort Brewery. Zane was a really nice guy. Sometimes I send him a message about like some of the content he puts up, and he always responds. And he's just a big name in like the craft beer world, and had some really great shows on over the years. So go check him out. Tickets are on sale now. So go to ZaneLamprey.com. Other than that, guys, that's it. I want to thank Diego for coming on. Just a fantastic interview. Really loved it. One of my favorites of the year so far. And that's it. Please, if you like the show, rate it and review it on iTunes or whatever podcast platform you listen to your podcasts on. We are on basically all of them: Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, you name it. And that really helps us get populated so we can get more listeners. And other than that, guys, life is funny. Laugh at it and keep the wind at your back.
I'm just going to put on my Kiss the Cook apron to get those dogs ready.